Chapter 34. First prize, a giant. Second prize, two giants. I didn't think Mallory was as okay with killing the thralls as she let on. When we failed to open the doors with Jack, brute force, or any amount of yelling, "Open Sesame," Mallory screamed in rage. She kicked one of the doors, broke her foot, then hopped off cursing and crying. Samira frowned.
"Magnus, go talk to her."
"Why me?" I didn't like the way Mallory was slashing the air with her knives.
"Because you can heal her foot,"
Sam said, annoyingly sensible as usual.
"And I need time to think about this door problem."
That didn't strike me as a good trade-off. But I went, Jack floating along next to me, saying,
"Ah, Norway! Good memories! Ah, a pile of dead thralls! Good memories!"
I stopped just out of reach of Mallory's knives.
"Hey, Mac, can I heal that foot for you?"
She glowered.
"Fine. Seems to be Heal Mallory's Stupid Injuries Day."
I knelt and put my hands on her boot. She cursed when I mended the bones, popping them back into place with a burst of summery magic. I rose warily. "How you doing?"
"Well, you just healed me, didn't you?"
"I wasn't talking about the foot." I gestured toward the dead thralls. She scowled.
"I didn't see any other way. Did you?"
In truth, I didn't. I was pretty sure Mallory's solution was the way we'd been meant to use the whetstone. The gods, or our weird, or some twisted sense of Nornish humor, had dictated that we would sail halfway across the world, undergo many hardships to win a gray rock, then use it to trick 9 miserable thralls into killing one another. "Sam and I couldn't have done it," I admitted. "You're the doer, just like Frigg said." Jack floated over, his blade shuddering and warbling like a handsaw.
"Frigg? Oh no, I don't like Frigg. She's too quiet, too devious, too..."
"She's my ma," Mallory grumbled.
"Oh, that Frigg," Jack said. "Yeah, she's great."
"I hate her," Mallory said.
"Gods, me too,"
Jack commiserated.
"Jack," I said, "why don't you go check on Sam? Maybe you can advise her on getting through those doors. Or you could sing to her. I know she'd love that."
"Yeah? Cool!"
Jack zoomed off to serenade Sam, which meant Sam would want to hit me later. Except it was Ramadan, so she had to be nice to me. Wow, I was a bad person. Mallory tested her weight on her foot. It seemed to work fine. I did good healing for a bad person.
"I'll be okay,"
she said, without much confidence.
"Just been a lot for one day. Learning about Frigg, on top of everything else."
I thought about Mallory and Halfborn's constant arguments on the ship. I did not understand their relationship, but I knew they needed each other as much as Hearthstone needed Blitzen, or our Viking boat needed to be yellow. It didn't make much sense. It wasn't easy, but it was just the way things had to be. "It's eating him up inside," I told her. "You two arguing."
"Well, he's a fool."
She hesitated.
"I mean, assuming you're talking about Gunderson."
"Smooth, Mac," I said.
"Shut up, Beantown."
She marched off to check on Sam. At the doors, Jack was trying to help by suggesting songs he could sing to inspire new ideas for getting inside. "Knocking on Heaven's Door," "I Got the Keys," or "Break on Through to the Other Side."
"How about None of the Above?"
Sam said.
"None of the Above," Jack mused. "Is that by Stevie Wonder?"
"How's it going, guys?" I asked. I didn't know if it was physically possible to strangle a magic sword, but I didn't want to see Sam try.
Not well, she admitted. There's no lock, no hinges, no keyhole. Jack refuses to try cutting through the iron.
Hey, Jack said, these doors are a masterpiece. Look at that craftsmanship. Besides, I'm pretty sure they're magic.
Sam rolled her eyes. If we had a drill, maybe we could make a hole in the iron and I could slither through as a snake. But since we don't have a drill...
From the other side of the doors, a woman's voice called,
Have you tried prying apart the seam?
We all jumped back. The voice had sounded very close to the door, as if the woman had been listening with her ear pressed to the metal. Jack quivered and glowed.
She speaks! Oh, beautiful door! Speak again!
I'm not the door, said the voice. I am Goonlode, daughter of Soot-Tung.
Oh, Jack said. That's disappointing. Mallory put her mouth to the door.
You're Soot-Tung's daughter? Are you guarding the prisoner? No, Goonlode said. I am the prisoner. I've been locked in here all by myself for... Actually, I've lost track of time. Centuries? Years? Which is longer?
I turned to my friends and used sign language, which was helpful even when there wasn't a hearthstone around.
Trap?
Mallory made a V and whacked the back of her hand against her forehead, meaning stupid, or duh.
Not much choice, Sam signed.
Then she called through the doors.
Miss Goonlode, I don't suppose there's a latch on the inside? Or a bolt you can turn? Well, it wouldn't be a very good prison if my father put a latch or a bolt where I could reach it. He usually just yanks the doors open with my Uncle Boggy. It takes both of them with their super giant strength. You don't have two people out there with super giant strength by chance.
Sam sized me up.
I'm afraid not.
I stuck out my tongue at her. Miss Goonlode, is Kvasir's meat in there with you, by chance?
A little, she said. Most of it was stolen by Odin a long time ago.
She sighed.
What a charmer he was. I let him get away, which, of course, is why my father locked me up. But there's still some left at the bottom of the last vat. It's my father's most prized possession. I suppose you want it?
That would be great, I admitted. Mallory elbowed me in the ribs.
If you could help us, Miss Goonlode, we'd be happy to free you, too. How sweet, said Goonlode. But I'm afraid my freedom is impossible. My father and my uncle have bound my life force to this cave. That's part of my punishment. I would die if I tried to leave.
Sam winced.
That seems a bit harsh.
Yes,
Goonlode sighed.
Though I did give the most valuable elixir in the nine worlds to our greatest enemy, so there's that. My son tried to undo the spell on the cave, but even he failed. And he's the god Braggy.
Mallory's eyes widened.
Your son is Braggy, god of poetry? That's him.
Goonlode's voice filled with pride.
He was born here, 9 months after Odin visited me. I may have mentioned Odin was a charmer.
Braggy, I said. Is he... Braggy? Mallory signed. Don't ruin things, idiot.
Magnus is only kidding. Of course he knows that brag literally means to recite poetry. Which is why Braggy is a lovely name. Bragging is a fantastic skill.
I blinked. Right, I knew that. So anyway, Miss Goonlode, you said something about prying the seam?
Yes, I think it might be possible, she said. With two blades, you might be able to wedge the doors apart just enough for me to get a glimpse of your faces, have a breath of fresh air, maybe see the sunlight again. That would be quite enough for me. Do you still have sunlight?
For now, yeah, I said. Though Ragnarok may be coming up soon. We're hoping to use the mead to stop it.
I see, Gunnlod said. I think my son Bragi would approve of that.
Then if we manage to pry the doors apart, I said, do you think you could pass us the mead through the opening?
Yes. I have an old garden hose here. I could siphon the mead from the vat, as long as you have a container to put it in.
I wasn't sure why Gunnlod would have an old garden hose lying around in her cave. Maybe she grew mushrooms in there, or maybe the hose was to activate her slip and slide. Sam pulled a canteen from her belt. Of course, the fasting girl was the only one who had remembered to bring water.
I've got a container, Gunnlod. Wonderful, Gunnlod said. Now you'll need two blades, thin and very strong. Otherwise they'll break.
Don't look at me, Jack said. I'm one thick blade, and I'm too young to break. Mallory sighed. She unsheathed her knives.
Miss Gunnlod, it so happens I have two thin, supposedly unbreakable daggers. You might want to step back from the doors now.
Mallory jammed the points of her weapons into the seam. They were just narrow enough to wedge inside, almost up to the hilts. Then Mallory pushed the grips away from each other, prying the doors apart. With a vast creaking sound, the doors parted, forming a V-shaped crack no more than an inch wide where the knives crossed. Mallory's arms trembled. She must have been using all her and Hergi's strength to keep the seam open. Beads of perspiration dotted her forehead.
Hurry,
she grunted. On the other side of the doors, Gunnlod's face appeared. Pale but beautiful icy blue eyes framed by wisps of golden hair. She inhaled deeply.
Oh, fresh air and sunlight. Thank you so much.
No problem, I said. So about that old hose?
Yes, I've got it ready.
Through the crack, she fed the end of an old black rubber hose. Sam fitted into the mouth of her canteen, and liquid began gurgling into the metal container. After so many challenges trying to win the mead of Kvasir, I hadn't expected the sound of victory to make me want to find a urinal.
Okay, that's it,
Gunnlod said. The hose retracted. Her face reappeared.
Good luck stopping Ragnarok. I hope you become wonderful braggers.
Thanks, I said. Are you sure we can't try to free you? We've got a friend back at our ship who's good with magic.
Oh, you'd never have time, Gunnlod said. Boggy and Suttung will be here any minute.
Sam squeaked.
What? Didn't I mention the silent alarm?
Gunnlod asked.
It triggers as soon as you start messing with the doors. I imagine you have 2, maybe 3 minutes before my father and uncle swoop down on you. You should hurry. Nice meeting you.
Mallory pulled her knives out of the seam. The doors clunked together once more.
And that,
she said, wiping her brow,
is why I don't trust nice people.
Guys? I pointed north, toward the tops of the mountains. Gleaming in the Norwegian sunlight, growing larger by the second, were the forms of 2 massive eagles. Chapter 35. I get an assist from the murder. Well, I said, which was usually how I started conversations about ways to save our butts from certain destruction. Any ideas?
Drink the mead?
Mallory suggested. Sam rattled her canteen.
Sounds like there's only one swig in here. If it doesn't work fast enough, or it wears off before Magnus faces Loki...
A squadron of tiny TJs started bayoneting my gut. Now that we'd gotten the mead, my looming challenge with Loki felt too real, too imminent. I forced that fear to the back burner. I had more immediate problems.
I don't think poetry is going to help with these guys, I said. Jack, what are our odds in combat?
Jack said. Boggy and Suttung. I know them by reputation. Strong, bad. I can take down one of them most likely, but both at once, before they manage to squash you all flat?
Can we outrun them? I asked. Outfly them? Get back to the ship for reinforcements?
Sadly, I already knew the answer. Watching the eagles fly, seeing how big their forms had gotten in the past minute, I knew they'd be on us soon. These guys were fast.
Sam slung the canteen over her shoulder.
I might be able to outfly them, at least as far as the ship, but carrying two people? Impossible. Carrying even one will slow me down.
Then we divide and conquer, Mallory said. Sam, take the mead. Fly back to the ship. Maybe one giant will follow you. If not, well, Magnus and I will do our best against both of them. At least you'll get the mead back to the others.
Somewhere off to my left, a little voice chirped.
The redhead is smart. We can help.
In a nearby tree sat a murder of crows. That's what you call a group of them. You learn useless facts like that in Valhalla.
Guys, I told my friends, those crows claim they can help.
Claim? Squawked another crow. You don't trust us? Send your two friends back to the ship with the mead. We'll give you a hand here. All we ask for in return is something shiny. Anything will do.
I related this to my friends. Mallory glanced toward the horizon. The giant eagles were getting awfully close.
But if Sam tries to carry me, I'll slow her down. The walnut, Sam said. Maybe you can fit inside. Oh no. We're wasting time, Sam said.
Gah!
Mallory fished out the shell and opened the halves.
How do I...
Imagine a silk scarf getting sucked into the nozzle of a vacuum cleaner, disappearing with a rude slurp. That's pretty much what happened to Mallory. The walnut closed and dropped to the ground, a tiny voice inside yelling Gaelic curses. Sam snatched up the nut.
Magnus, you sure about this?
I'm fine. I've got Jack.
You've got Jack, Jack sang.
Sam shot skyward, leaving me with just my sword and a flock of birds. I looked at the crows.
Okay, guys, what's the plan?
Plan? Cawed the nearest crow. We just said we'd help. We don't have a plan, per se.
Stupid, misleading crows. Also, what kind of bird uses the term per se? Since I didn't have time to murder the entire murder, I contemplated my limited options.
Fine. When I give you guys the signal, fly in the nearest giant's face and try to distract him.
Sure, chirped a different crow. What's the signal?
Before I could think of one, a huge eagle plummeted down and landed in front of me. The only good news, if you could call it that. The other eagle kept flying, pursuing Sam. We had divided. Now we needed to conquer. I hoped the eagle in front of me would morph into a small, easy-to-defeat giant, preferably one who used Nerf weapons. Instead, he rose to 30 feet tall, his skin like chipped obsidian. He had Goonload's blonde hair and pale blue eyes, which looked very strange with the rocky volcanic skin. Ice and snow flecked his whiskers like he'd been face-diving in a box of frosted flakes. His armor was stitched from various hides, including some that looked like endangered species. Zebra, elephant, and hare-ye. In the giant's hand glittered an onyx, double-sided axe.
"Who dares steal from the mighty Suttung?"
he bellowed.
"I just flew in from Niflheim, and boy, are my arms tired!"
I couldn't think of any response that did not involve high-pitched screaming. Jack floated right up to the giant.
"I don't know, man," he volunteered. "Some dude just swiped your mead and took off that way. I think he said his name was Hrungnir."
Jack pointed in the general direction of York, England. I thought that was a pretty good fake-out, but Suttung only frowned.
"Nice try," he rumbled. "Hrungnir would never dare cross me. You are the thieves, and you have pulled me away from important work. We are about to launch the great ship Naglfar. I can't be flying home every time the alarm goes off."
"So Naglfar is close, then?" I asked.
"Oh, not too far," Suttung admitted. "Once you cross into Jotunheim, you follow the coast to the border of Niflheim, and..."
He scowled.
"Stop trying to trick me! You are thieves, and you must die!"
He raised his axe.
"Wait!" I yelled.
"Why?"
demanded the giant.
"Yeah, why?"
demanded Jack. I hated it when my sword sided with a giant. Jack was ready to fight, but I had bad memories of Hrungnir, the last stone giant we'd faced. He hadn't been an easy slice and dice. Also, he exploded on death. I wanted every advantage I could get against Suttung, including the use of my murder of unhelpful crows, for whom I had not yet thought of a signal.
"You claim we're thieves," I said. "But how'd you get that mead, thief?"
Suttung kept his axe suspended over his head, giving us an unfortunate view of his underarm hair in his obsidian armpits.
"I am no thief. My parents were slain by two evil dwarves, Fjallar and Gjallar."
I hate those guys," I said.
"Right," Suttung agreed. "I would have slaughtered them as payback, but they offered me Kvasir's mead instead. It is mine by right of Wergild."
"Oh." That kind of took the wind out of my argument.
"Still, that mead was created from the blood of Kvasir, a murdered god. It belongs to the gods."
"So you would make things right,"
the giant summed up.
"By stealing the mead yet again for yourself? And killing my brother's thralls in the process?"
I may have mentioned that I don't like giant logic.
"Maybe,"
I said. Then, in a stroke of genius, I thought of a signal for my avian allies.
"Eat crow!"
Sadly, the crows were slow to recognize my brilliance. Suttung yelled,
"Die!"
Jack tried to intercept the axe, but it had gravity, momentum, and the force of a giant behind it. Jack did not. I dove aside as the axe split the field where I'd been standing. Meanwhile, the crows had a leisurely conversation.
"Why did he say, eat crow?"
one cawed.
"It's an idiomatic expression," another explained. "It means to admit you were wrong." "Yes, but why did he say it?"
asked a third.
"Roar!"
Suttung yanked his axe from the ground. Jack flew into my hand.
"We can take him together, senor!"
I really hoped those were not going to be the last words I ever heard.
"Crows,"
one of the crows said.
Hey, wait a minute. We're crows. I bet that was the signal.
Yes, I yelped. Get him!
Okay, Jack yelled happily.
We will!
Soot Tung raised his axe over his head once more. Jack pulled me into battle as the murder of crows rose from their tree and swarmed Soot Tung's face, pecking at his eyes and nose and Frosted Flake's beard. The giant roared, stumbling and blind.
Ha-ha! Jack yelled. We have you now!
He yanked me forward. Together, we plunged Jack into the giant's left foot. Soot Tung howled. His axe slipped from his hands, the heavy blade impaling itself in the skull of its owner. And that, kids, is why you should never use a battle axe without wearing your safety helmet. The giant fell with a thunderous thud right on top of the pile of thralls. The crows settled on the grass around me.
That wasn't very chivalrous, one remarked. But you're a Viking, so I guess chivalry doesn't apply.
You're right, Godfrey,
another agreed.
Chivalry was more of a late medieval concept.
A third crow cawed.
You're both forgetting about the Normans.
Bill, just stop, said Godfrey.
No one cares about your doctoral thesis on the Norman invasion.
Shiny things?
Asked the second crow.
We get shiny things now?
The entire murder peered at me with beady, greedy black eyes. I only had one shiny thing. Jack, who was presently doing his victory dance around the giant's corpse, singing,
Who killed a giant? I killed a giant! Who's a giant killer? I'm a giant killer!
As tempting as it was to leave him with the crows, I thought I might need my sword the next time a giant had to be stabbed in the foot. Then I glanced at the pile of dead thralls.
Right over there, I told the crows. 9 extremely shiny scythe blades. Will those do?
Said Bill. I'm not sure where we'd put them. We could rent a storage unit, suggested Godfrey.
Good idea, said Bill.
Very well, dead mortal boy. It was nice doing business with you.
Just be careful, I warned. Those blades are sharp.
Oh, don't worry about us, squawked Godfrey. You've got the most dangerous path ahead of you. You'll only find one friendly port between here and the Ship of the Dead. If you can even call the Fortress of Skadi friendly.
I shivered, remembering what Niort had told me about his estranged wife.
It's a wretched place, Bill cawed. Cold, cold, cold. And no shiny things, like, at all. Now, if you'll excuse us, we have to start picking our way through all this carrion to get at those shiny blades. I love our job, said Godfrey.
Agreed,
squawked the other crows. They fluttered over to the pile of bodies and went to work, which was not something I wanted to watch. Before the murder could murder themselves on the scythe blades and blame me for it, Jack and I began our long hike back to the Big Banana.
Chapter 36 The Ballad of Halfborn, Hovel Hero. Our crew had taken care of the other giant. I could tell because of the badly hacked up, decapitated giant body sprawling on the beach next to our dock. His head was nowhere to be seen. A few fishermen made their way around the corpse, holding their noses. Maybe they thought the giant was a dead whale. Samira stood grinning on the dock.
Welcome back, Magnus. We were getting worried.
I tried to match her smile.
Nah, I'm fine.
I explained what had happened with the crows and Soot Tung. The hike to the ship had actually been pleasant. Just me and Jack enjoying the meadows and rural backroads of Norway. Along the way, goats and birds had made critical comments about my personal hygiene, but I couldn't blame them. I looked like I'd trekked through half the country and rolled down the other half.
Kid!
Blitzen came running down the gangplank, Hearthstone right behind him.
I'm glad you're okay.
Oh, yikes!
Blitz stepped back hastily.
You smell like that dumpster on Park Street.
Thanks, I said. That's the smell I was going for. I couldn't tell much about Blitz's condition since he wore his anti-sun netting, but he sounded cheerful enough. Hearthstone looked much better, like a solid day of sleep had taken the edge off our experiences in Alfheim. The pink and green scarf from Alex looped jauntily across his black leather lapels.
Stone was useful, he signed.
I thought about the pile of dead bodies we'd left in the valley. We got the mead, I signed. Couldn't have done it without the whetstone. Hearth nodded, apparently satisfied.
You do smell, though.
So I've been told. I gestured at the corpse of the giant. What happened here?
That, Sam said, her eyes twinkling, was all Halfborn Gunderson.
She yelled toward the deck of the ship.
Halfborn?
The berserker was having a heated conversation with TJ, Alex, and Mallory. He looked relieved to come to the railing.
Ah, there he is, Halfborn said. Magnus, would you please explain to TJ that those thralls had to die? He's giving Mac a hard time about it.
Three things struck me about this. The nickname Mac had been officially adopted. Halfborn was defending Mallory Keene. And, oh right, it figured that TJ, being the son of a freed slave, might have a wee bit of a problem with us slaughtering 9 thralls.
They were slaves, TJ said, his voice heavy with anger. I get what happened. I get the reasoning. But still, you guys killed them. You can't expect me to be okay with that.
They were Jotuns, Halfborn said. They weren't even human.
Blitz cleared his throat.
A gentle reminder, Berserker. Hearth and I aren't human either.
Ah, you know what I mean. I can't believe I'm saying this, but Mac did the right thing.
Don't defend me, Mallory snapped. That makes it so much worse.
She faced Thomas Jefferson Jr.
I'm sorry it had to happen that way, TJ. I really am. It was a bloody mess.
TJ hesitated. Mallory so rarely apologized that when she did, it carried a lot of force. TJ gave her a grudging nod. Not like everything was okay, but like he would at least consider her words. He glared at Halfborn, but Mallory put her hand on the infantryman's shoulder. I remembered what Sam had said about TJ and Halfborn once being enemies. Now I could see just how much they needed Mallory to keep them on the same team.
I'm going below.
TJ glanced over at the corpse of the giant. The air is fresher down there. He marched off. Alex puffed out her cheeks.
Honestly, I don't see that you guys had much choice. But you'll have to give TJ some processing time. He was already pretty miffed since we spent our morning searching Flom and found nothing but tourists and troll souvenirs.
Blitzen grunted.
At least we have the mead now, so this wasn't all for nothing.
I hoped he was right. Whether I could defeat Loki in a flighting, that remained to be seen. And I had the feeling that no matter how magical the mead was, my success would depend on me. Alas, me was my least favorite person to depend on. But what about this giant? I asked, anxious to change the subject. He's Boggy, right? How did you kill him? Everybody looked at Halfborn.
Oh, come on, Halfborn protested. You guys helped a lot.
Hearthstone signed. Blitz and I slept through it.
TJ and I tried to fight him, Alex admitted. But Boggy dropped a building on us. She pointed down the shoreline. I hadn't noticed it before, but one of the lovely blue cottages of Flom had been scooped up from its spot on Main Street, which now had a gaping hole like a missing tooth, and slammed onto the beach, where the cottage had collapsed like a deflated bouncy house. What the locals made of this, I had no idea, but nobody seemed to be running around town in a panic.
By the time I got back to the ship, Sam said, the giant was only 30 seconds behind me. I had just enough energy left to explain what was happening. Halfborn took it from there.
The berserker glowered.
It wasn't so much.
Not so much?
Sam turned to me.
Boggy landed in the middle of town, turned into giant form, and started stomping around and yelling threats.
He called Flom a dirty hovel, Halfborn grumbled. Nobody says that about my hometown.
Halfborn charged him, Sam continued. Boggy was like 40 feet tall.
45, Alex corrected.
And he had this glamour cast over him, so he looked extra terrifying.
Like Godzilla, Alex considered. Or maybe my dad. I have trouble telling them apart.
But Halfborn just charged right in, Sam continued, yelling, For Flom!
Not the best war cry, Gunderson admitted. Luckily for me, the giant wasn't as strong as he looked.
Alex snorted. He was plenty strong. You just went, well, berserk.
Alex cupped her hand like she was telling me a secret.
This guy is scary when he goes into full berserker mode. He literally hacked the giant's feet out from under him. Then, when Boggy fell to his knees, Halfborn went to work on the rest of him.
Gunderson harumphed.
Aw, oh, now, Fiero, you wired off his head. It went flying.
He gestured into the fjord.
Somewhere out there.
Boggy was almost dead by that point, Alex insisted. He was in the process of falling over. That's the only reason the head flew so far.
Well, Halfborn said, he's dead. That's all that matters.
Mallory spat over the side of the boat. And I missed the whole thing, because I was stuck inside the walnut.
Yes,
Halfborn muttered.
Yes, you did.
Was it my imagination? Or did Halfborn sound disappointed that Mallory had missed his moment of glory?
Once you're in the walnut, Mallory said, you can't get out until somebody lets you out. Sam didn't remember I was in there for like 20 minutes. Oh, come on, Sam said. It was more like 5. Felt longer. Halfborn nodded.
I imagine time goes slower when you're inside a nut.
Shut up, oaf,
Mallory growled.
Halfborn grinned.
So are we making sail or what? Time's a-wasting!
The temperature dropped as we sailed into the sunset. Amidships, Sam did her evening prayer. Hearthstone and Blitzen sat at the prow, gazing in quiet awe at the fjord walls. Mallory went below to check on TJ and cook up some dinner. I stood at the rudder next to Halfborn Gunderson, listening to the sail ripple in the wind and the magical oars swish through the water in perfect time.
I'm fine, Halfborn said.
Hmm? I glanced over. His face was blue in the evening shadows, like he'd painted it for combat, as he sometimes did.
You were going to ask if I was okay, he said. That's why you're standing here, right? I'm fine.
Ah, good.
I'll admit it was strange walking through the streets of Flom, thinking about how I grew up there in a little hut with just my mom. Prettier place than I remembered,
and I may have wondered what would have happened if I'd stayed there, gotten married, had a life.
Right.
And when Boggy insulted the place, I lost it. I wasn't expecting to have any, you know, feelings about being home.
Sure.
It's not like I expect anybody to write a ballad about me saving my hometown.
He tilted his head as if he could almost hear the melody.
I'm glad to be out of that place again. I don't regret my choices when I was alive, even if I did leave my mom behind and never saw her again.
Okay.
And Mallory meeting her own mother, that didn't raise any particular emotions in me. I'm just glad Mac found out the truth, even if she did run off on a wild train ride without telling us, and could have gotten herself killed, and I never would have known what happened to her. Oh, and you and Sam too, of course.
Of course. Halfborn hit the rudder handle.
But curse that vixen! What was she thinking? The daughter of Frigg?
Halfborn's laugh sounded a little hysterical.
No wonder she's so...
He waved his hand, making signs that could have meant almost anything. Exasperating? Fantastic? Angry? Food processor? I said. Halfborn patted my shoulder.
Thanks, Magnus. I'm glad we had this talk. You're all right, for a healer.
Appreciate it.
Take the rudder, will you? Just stay in the middle of the fjord and watch out for krakens.
Krakens? I protested. Halfborn nodded absently and went below, maybe to check on dinner, or Mallory and TJ, or simply because I smelled bad. By full dark, we'd reached the open sea. I didn't crash the ship or release any krakens, which was good. I did not want to be that guy. Samira came aft and took over rudder duty from me. She was chewing her med-jewel dates with her usual expression of post-fast ecstasy.
How are you holding up?
I shrugged. Considering the kind of day we've had? Good, I guess. She raised her canteen and sloshed around Kvasir's mead.
You want to take charge of this? Smell it or sip it or something, just to test it?
The idea made me nauseous. Keep it for now, please. I'll wait until I absolutely have to drink it.
Sensible.
The effect might not be permanent. It's not just that, I said. I'm afraid I'll drink it and it won't be enough. That I still won't be able to beat Loki. Sam looked like she wanted to give me a hug, though hugging a boy wasn't something a good Muslima would ever do.
I wonder the same thing, Magnus. Not about you, but about me. Who knows if I'll have the strength to face my father again? Who knows if any of us will?
Is that supposed to boost my morale? Sam laughed.
All we can do is try, Magnus. I choose to believe that our hardships make us stronger. Everything we've been through on this voyage, it matters. It increases our chances of victory.
I glanced toward the prow. Blitzen and Hearthstone had fallen asleep side by side in their sleeping bags at the base of the dragon figurehead. It seemed a strange place to sleep, given our adventure in Alfheim, but they both seemed at peace. I hope you're right, Sam, I said, because some of it's been pretty rough. Sam sighed, as if letting go of all the hunger, thirst, and curse words she'd kept inside while fasting.
I know. I think the hardest thing we can ever do is see someone for who they really are. Our parents, our friends, ourselves.
I wondered if she was thinking about Loki, or maybe herself. She could have been talking about any of us on the ship. None of us were free of our pasts. During the voyage, we'd looked into some pretty harsh mirrors. My moment at the mirror was yet to come. When I faced Loki, I was sure he'd delight in magnifying my every fault. stripping bare my every fear and weakness. If he could, he would reduce me to a sniveling grease spot. We had until tomorrow to reach Naglfar, Frick had said, or the next day at the latest. I found myself wavering, almost wishing we would miss the deadline so I wouldn't have to face Loki one-on-one. But no. My friends were counting on me. For the sake of everybody I knew, everybody I didn't know, I had to delay Ragnarok as long as possible. I had to give Sam and Amir a chance at a normal life, and Annabeth and Percy, and Percy's baby sister Estelle. They all deserved better than planetary destruction. I said goodnight to Sam, then spread my own sleeping bag out on the deck. I slept fitfully, dreaming of dragons and thralls, of falling down mountains and battling clay giants. Loki's laughter echoed in my ears. Over and over, the deck turned to a gruesome patchwork of dead men's keratin, enfolding me in a disgusting toenail cocoon. "Good morning," Blitzen said, jolting me awake. The morning was bitter cold and steel gray. I sat up, breaking a sheet of ice that had formed on my sleeping bag. Off our starboard side, snow-capped mountains loomed even taller than the fjords of Norway. All around us, the sea was a broken-up puzzle of ice blocks. The deck was completely glazed in frost, turning our bright yellow warship the color of weak lemonade. Blitzen was the only other person on deck. He was bundled up, but he wasn't wearing any sun protection, despite the fact that it was clearly daytime. That could only mean one thing. "We're not in Midgard anymore," I guessed. Blitzen smiled wearily, no humor in his eyes.
"We've been in Jotunheim for hours now, kid. The others are below, trying to stay warm. You, well, being the son of the summer god, you're more resistant to cold. But even you are going to start having trouble soon. Judging from how fast the temperature is dropping, we're getting close to the borders of Niflheim."
I shivered instinctively. Niflheim, the primordial realm of ice. One of the few worlds I hadn't yet visited, and one I wasn't anxious to explore.
"How will we know when we're there?" I asked.
The ship lurched with a juddering noise that loosened my joints. I staggered to my feet. The big banana was dead in the water. The surface of the sea had turned to solid ice in every direction.
"I'd say we're here,"
Blitz sighed.
"Let's hope Hearthstone can summon some magical fire. Otherwise, we're all going to freeze to death within the hour."
Chapter 37. Alex Bites My Face Off. I have died many painful deaths. I've been impaled, decapitated, burned, drowned, crushed, and thrown off the terrace of floor 103. I prefer all of those to hypothermia. After only a few minutes, my lungs felt like I was breathing glass dust. We got all hands on deck, another nautical term I finally understood, to deal with the ice problem, but we had little success. I sent Jack out to break up the floe in front of us, while Halfborn and TJ used pole axes to chip away at the port and starboard sides. Sam flew ahead with a rope and tried to tug us along. Alex turned into a walrus and pushed from behind. I was too cold to make any jokes about how nice she looked with tusks, whiskers, and flippers. Hearthstone summoned a new rune, Kenots. He explained this was Kenots, the torch, the fire of life. Instead of disappearing in a flash, like most runes did, Kenots continued to burn above the foredeck, a floating bend of fire 5 feet high, melting the frost on the deck and rigging. Kenots kept us warm enough to avoid instant death,
but Blitz fretted that sustaining the rune for an extended period would also burn up Hearth's energy. A few months ago, expending so much energy would have killed him. Now he was stronger. Still, I worried too. I found a pair of binoculars in the supplies and scanned the mountains for any promise of shelter or harbor. I saw nothing but sheer rock. I didn't realize my fingers were turning blue until Blitz pointed it out. I summoned a little fray warmth into my hands, but the effort made me dizzy. Using the power of summer here was like trying to remember everything that had happened on my first day of elementary school. I knew summer still existed, somewhere, but it was so distant, so vague, I could barely conjure a memory of it. But, Blitz, you don't look affected, I noted. He scratched the ice from his beard.
Dwarves do well in the cold. You and I will be the last ones to freeze to death. But that's not much comfort.
Mallory, Blitz, and I tried using oars to push away the ice as Halfborn and TJ broke it up. We alternated duties, going below decks two or three at a time to warm up, though below wasn't much warmer. We would have made faster time just getting out and walking, but Walrus Alex reported that the ice had some nasty thin spots. Also, we had nowhere to shelter. At least the ship offered supplies and some cover from the wind. My arms started to go numb. I got so used to shivering, I couldn't tell whether it had started to snow or whether my vision was blurred. The fiery rune was the only thing keeping us alive, but its light and heat slowly faded. Hearthstone sat cross-legged beneath the kenauts, his eyes closed in intense concentration. Beads of sweat dripped from his brow and froze as soon as they splattered on the deck. After a while, even Jack started to act glum. He no longer seemed interested in serenading us or joking about doing icebreaker activities.
"And this is the nicest part of Niflheim," Jack grumbled. "You should see the cold regions."
I'm not sure how much time passed. It seemed impossible that there had been any life before this one. Breaking ice, pushing ice, shivering, dying. Then, at the prow, Mallory croaked,
"Hey, look!"
In front of us, the swirling snow thinned. Only a few hundred yards ahead, jutting from the main line of cliffs, was a jagged peninsula like the blade of a corroded axe. A thin line of black gravel beach hugged the base, and toward the top of the cliff, were those fires flickering? We turned the ship in that direction, but we didn't make it far. The ice thickened, cementing our hull in place. Above Hearth's head, the Kenauts rune guttered weakly. We all gathered on the deck, solemn and silent. Every blanket and extra piece of clothing in the hold had been wrapped around us.
Walk for it, Blitz suggested.
Even he was starting to stutter.
We pair up for warmth. Get across the ice to the shore. Maybe we find shelter.
It wasn't so much a survival plan as a plan for dying in a different place. But we grimly went to work. We shouldered all the supplies we couldn't live without. Some food, water, the canteen of Kvasir's mead, our weapons. Then we climbed onto the ice, and I folded the big banana into a handkerchief, because dragging the ship along behind us would have been, well, a drag. Jack volunteered to float in front of us and test the ice with his blade. I wasn't sure whether that would make things more or less dangerous for us, but he refused to go back into pendant form, because the after effects of his extra exertion would have killed me. He's thoughtful that way. As we paired up, somebody's arm curled around my waist. Alex Fierro wedged herself next to me, wrapping a blanket around our heads and shoulders.
I looked at her in amazement. A pink wool scarf covered her head and mouth, so all I could see were her two-toned eyes and some wisps of green hair.
Shut up, she stammered. You're warm and summery.
Jack led the way across the ice. Behind him, Blitzen did his best to prop up Hearthstone, who stumbled along with the rune of Kennots above him, though its heat was now more like a candle's than a bonfire's. Sam and Mallory followed, then TJ and Halfborn, and finally Alex and me. We trudged across the frozen sea, making our way toward that outcropping of rock, but our destination seemed to get farther away with every step. Could the cliff be a mirage? Maybe distance was fluid on the borders of Niflheim and Jotunheim. Once, in the hall of Utgard Loki, Alex and I had rolled a bowling ball all the way to the White Mountains in New Hampshire, so I supposed anything was possible. I couldn't feel my face anymore. My feet had turned to 1 gallon boxes of squishy ice cream. I thought how sad it would be to come as far as we had, facing so many gods, giants, and monsters, only to keel over and freeze to death in the middle of nowhere. I clung to Alex. She clung to me. Her breath rattled. I wished she still had her walrus blubber, because she was all skin and bone, as wiry as her garrote. I wanted to chide her. Eat, eat! You're wasting away! I appreciated her warmth, though. Under any other circumstances, she would have killed me for getting this close. Also, I would have freaked out from so much physical contact. I considered it a personal triumph that I'd learned to hug my friends once in a while, but I wasn't usually good with closeness. The need for warmth, and maybe the fact that this was Alex, made it okay somehow. I concentrated on her scent, a sort of citrusy fragrance that made me think of orange groves in a sunny valley in Mexico. Not that I'd ever been to a place like that, but it smelled nice.
Guava juice,
Alex croaked.
What?
I asked.
Roof deck. Bay. That was nice.
She's clinging to good memories, I realized. Trying to stay alive.
Yeah, I agreed. York, she said. Mr. Chippy, you didn't know what takeaway meant.
I hate you, I said.
Keep talking.
Her laugh sounded more like a smoker's cough.
When you returned from Alfheim, the look on your face when I took back my pink glasses.
But you were glad to see me?
Yeah. You have some entertainment value.
Struggling to walk on the ice, our heads so close together, I could almost imagine Alex and I were a clay warrior with two faces, a twin being. The thought was comforting. Maybe 50 yards from the cliff, the Kennot's rune sputtered out. Hearth stumbled against Blitz. The temperature plummeted further, which I didn't think was possible. My lungs expelled their last bit of warmth. They screamed when I tried to inhale.
Keep going!
Blitz yelled back to us hoarsely.
I am not dying in this outfit!
We obliged, marching step by step toward the narrow gravel beach, where at least we could die on solid ground. Blitz and Hearth were almost to the shore when Alex stopped abruptly. I didn't have any energy left either, but I thought I should try to sound encouraging.
We have to keep going.
I looked over. We were nose to nose under the blankets. Her eyes glinted, amber and brown. Her scarf had dipped below her chin. Her breath was like limes. Then, before I even knew what was happening, she kissed me. She could have bitten off my mouth and I would have been less surprised. Her lips were cracked and rough from the cold. Her nose fit perfectly next to mine. Our faces aligned, our breath mixed. Then she pulled away.
"I wasn't going to die without doing that," she said.
The world of primordial ice must not have frozen me completely, because my chest burned like a coal furnace.
"Well,"
she frowned,
"stop gaping and let's move."
We trudged toward the shore. My mind wasn't working properly. I wondered if Alex had kissed me just to inspire me to keep going, or to distract me from our imminent deaths. It didn't seem possible that she'd actually wanted to kiss me. Whatever the case, that kiss was the only reason I made it to shore. Our friends were already there, huddled against the rocks. They hadn't seemed to notice the kiss between Alex and me. Why would they? Everyone was too busy freezing to death.
I have gunpowder, TJ stuttered. Could make a fire?
Unfortunately, we had nothing to burn except our clothes, and we needed those. Blitz looked miserably at the cliff face, which was sheer and unforgiving.
I'll try to shape the rock, he said. Maybe I can dig us a cave.
I'd seen Blitz mold solid rock before, but it took a lot of energy and concentration. Even then, he'd only been making simple handholds. I didn't see how we'd have the strength to dig an entire cave. Nor was that going to save us. But I appreciated his stubborn optimism. He'd just dug his fingers into the stone when the entire cliff rumbled. A line of blazing light etched the shape of a door, 20 feet square, that swung inward with a deep grinding noise. In the opening stood a giantess as terrible and beautiful as the Niflheim landscape. She was 10 feet tall, dressed in white and gray furs, her brown eyes cold and angry, her dark hair braided in multiple strands like a cat-o'-nine-tails whip.
"Who dares rock-shape my front door?" she asked.
Blitz gulped.
I...
Why should I not kill you all?
The giantess demanded.
Or perhaps, since you look half-dead already, I'll just close my door and let you freeze.
Wait, I croaked. Skadi. You're Skadi, right?
Gods of Asgard, I thought. Please let this be Skadi, and not some random giantess named Gertrude the Unfriendly.
I'm Magnus Chase, I continued. Niord is my grandfather. He sent me to find you.
A variety of emotions rippled across Skadi's face. Irritation, resentment, and maybe just a hint of curiosity.
All right, frozen boy, she growled. That gets you in the door. Once you've all thawed out and explained yourselves, I'll decide whether or not to use you for archery targets.
Chapter 38. Skadi knows all, shoots all.
I didn't want to let go of Alex. Or maybe I just physically couldn't. Two of Skadi's Jotun servants literally had to pull us apart. One of them carried me up a winding set of stairs into the fortress, my body still hunched in hobbling old man position. Compared to outside, Skadi's hall felt like a sauna, though the thermostat probably wasn't set much higher than freezing.
I was carried through high stone corridors with vaulted ceilings that reminded me of the big old churches in Back Bay. Great places to warm up in when you're homeless in winter. Occasionally, a booming sound echoed through the fortress, like someone was shooting cannons in the distance. Scotty barked orders to her servants, and we were all taken to separate rooms to get cleaned up. A Yotun manservant, giant servant, lowered me into a bath so hot, I hit a high note I hadn't been able to sing since fourth grade. While I soaked, he gave me something to drink, a vile herbal concoction that burned my throat and made my fingers and toes spasm. He hauled me out of the bath, and by the time he got me dressed in a white wool tunic and breeches, I had to admit I felt almost okay again, even with Jack now hanging back on my neck chain as a runestone. The color of my toes and fingers had returned to pink. I could feel my face. My nose had not fallen off from frostbite, and my lips were right where Alex had left them.
"You'll live," the Yotun grumbled, like this was a personal failure on his part.
He gave me comfortable fur shoes and a thick, warm cloak, then led me out to the main hall, where my friends were waiting. The hall was standard Viking for the most part. A rough-hewn stone floor covered with straw, a ceiling made from spears and shields, three tables in a U-shape around a central fire, though Scotty's flames burned white and blue and seemed to give off no heat. Along one side of the hall, a row of cathedral-sized windows opened onto a blizzard-blurred vista. I saw no glass on the windows, but the wind and snow didn't trespass inside. At the center table, Scotty sat on a throne carved from yew wood and overlain with furs. Her servants bustled around, putting out platters of fresh bread and roasted meat, along with steaming mugs that smelled like hot chocolate. Suddenly, I liked Skadi a lot more. My friends were all dressed like me, in white wool, so we looked like a secret society of very clean monks, the Fellowship of the Bleach. I'll admit, I scanned for Alex first, hoping to sit next to her, but she was on the far bench, wedged between Mallory and Halfborn, with TJ at the end. Alex caught me. She mimicked my gawping face like, "What are you looking at?" So it was back to normal then. One life and death kiss, and we returned to our regularly scheduled snark. Great. I sat next to Blitzen, Hearthstone, and Sam, which was just fine. We all dug into our dinner, except for Sam. She hadn't bathed, since that was also against Ramadan rules, but she'd changed clothes. Her hijab had shifted color to match her white outfit. Somehow, she managed not to stare longingly at everyone else's food, which convinced me beyond a doubt that she had superhuman endurance. Skadi lounged on her throne, her cat-o'-nine tails hair draped over her shoulders, her fur cloak making her look even larger than she was. She spun an arrow on top of her knee. Behind her, the wall was lined with racks of equipment. Skis, bows, quivers of arrows. I guessed she was a fan of cross-country archery.
"Welcome, travelers," said our host. "To Thrymheimir. In your language, Thunderhome."
As if on cue, a rumble shook the room. The same boom I'd heard when deeper in the fortress. Now I knew what it was. Snow thunder. You heard it in Boston sometimes when a snowstorm mixed with a thunderstorm. It sounded like firecrackers going off inside a cotton pillow. If you magnified that sound by a million.
"Thunderhome," Halfborn nodded gravely. "A good name, considering, you know, the constant..."
Thunder boomed again, rattling the plates on the table. Mallory leaned over to Alex.
I can't reach Gunderson. Hit him for me, will you?
Despite the huge size of the hall, the acoustics were perfect. I could hear every whisper. I wondered if Skadi had designed the place with that in mind. The giantess wasn't eating from the plate in front of her. Best case scenario, she was fasting for Ramadan. Worst case scenario, she was waiting until we were sufficiently fattened up so she could enjoy us as her main course. She tapped her arrow on her knee while studying me intently.
So, you're one of Niord's, eh?
She mused.
Child of Frey, I suppose.
Yes, ma'am. I wasn't sure if lady or miss or huge scary person was the appropriate title, but Skadi didn't kill me, so I figured I hadn't offended her. Yet.
I can see the resemblance.
She wrinkled her nose, as if the similarity was not a point in my favor.
Niord wasn't the worst husband.
He was kind. He had beautiful feet.
Outstanding feet, Blitz agreed, wagging a pork rib for emphasis.
But we just couldn't get along, Skadi continued. Irreconcilable differences. He didn't like my hall. Can you believe it?
Hearthstone signed. You have a beautiful hall. The gesture for beautiful was circling your hand in front of your face, then spreading your fingertips apart like poof. The first few times I saw it, I thought Hearth was saying, this thing makes my face explode.
Thank you, elf, said Skadi,
because all the best Jotuns understand ASL.
Certainly, Thunderhome is better than Niord's seaside palace. All those gulls constantly screeching. I couldn't stand the noise.
Snow thunder shook the room again. Yes, Alex said. No peace and quiet. Like here.
Exactly, said Skadi. My father built this fortress. May his soul rest with Ymir, the first giant. Now Thrymheimir is mine, and I don't intend to leave it. I've had my fill of the Aesir.
She leaned forward, still holding that wicked barbed arrow.
Now tell me, Magnus Chase, why did Niord send you to me? Please tell me he doesn't still harbor illusions about us getting back together.
Why me? I thought. Skadi seemed okay. I'd met enough giants to know they weren't all bad, any more than all gods were good. But if Skadi was done with the Aesir, I wasn't sure she'd welcome us going after Loki, who was, of course, the Aesir's main enemy. I definitely didn't want to tell her that my grandfather, the god of seaside pedicures, still pined for her. On the other hand, some gut instinct told me Skadi would see through any lies or omissions as easily as she heard every whisper in this hall. Thrymheimir was not a place for hiding secrets.
Niord wanted me to see how you felt about him, I admitted.
She sighed.
I don't believe this. He didn't send you with flowers, did he? I told him to stop it with the bouquets.
No flowers, I promised, suddenly sympathizing with all the innocent Niflheim delivery persons she had probably shot dead. And Niord's feelings aren't the main reason we're here. We've come to stop Loki. The servants all stopped what they were doing. They glanced at me, then at their mistress, as if thinking, well, this should be interesting. My friends watched me with expressions that ranged from, you got this, Blitzen, to, please don't screw up as much as usual, Alex. Scotty's dark eyes glittered.
Go on.
Loki is getting his ship Naglfar ready to sail, I said. We're here to stop him, recapture him, and bring him back to the Aesir so we don't have to fight Ragnarok, like, tomorrow. Another peal of thunder shook the mountain. The giantess's face was impossible to read. I imagined her sending her arrow across the room and embedding it in my chest like a mistletoe dart. Instead, she threw back her head and laughed.
Is that why you're carrying Kvasir's mead? You intend to challenge Loki to a flighting?
I gulped. Yeah. How do you know we have Kvasir's mead? My second unspoken question was, and are you going to take it away from us? The giantess leaned forward.
I am fully aware of everything that happens in my hall, Magnus Chase, and everyone who passes through it. I have taken inventory of your weapons, your supplies, your powers, your scars.
She scanned the room, her eyes resting on each of us. Not with sympathy, more like she was picking targets.
I also would have known if you'd lied to me. Be glad you did not. So, tell me, why should I let you continue your quest? Persuade me not to kill you.
Halfborn Gunderson wiped his beard.
Well, for one thing, Lady Skadi, killing us would be a lot of trouble. If you know our abilities, you know we're excellent fighters. We'd give you quite a challenge.
An arrow thudded into the table an inch from Halfborn's hand. I didn't even see how it happened. I looked back at Skadi. She suddenly had a bow in her hand, a second arrow already nocked and ready to fly. Halfborn didn't flinch. He set down his hot chocolate and belched.
Lucky shot.
Ha!
Skadi lowered her bow, and my heart started pumping blood again.
So you have bravery. Or foolhardiness, at least. What else can you tell me?
That we're no friends of Loki's, Samira volunteered.
And neither are you.
Skadi raised an eyebrow.
What makes you say so? If you were a friend of Loki's, we would already be dead.
Sam gestured toward the windows.
The harbor of Naglfar is close, isn't it? I can sense my father nearby. You don't like Loki gathering his army right on your doorstep. Let us continue our quest, and we can take my father off the board.
Alex nodded.
Yes, we can.
Interesting, Skadi mused. Two children of Loki sit at my dinner table, and you both seem to hate Loki even more than I do. Ragnarok makes strange allies.
TJ clapped once, so loudly we all flinched, except for Hearth.
I knew it!
He grinned and pointed at Skadi.
I knew this lady had good taste. Hot chocolate this tasty, a hall this awesome, and her servants don't wear thrall collars.
Skadi curled her lip.
No, Enherji, I detest the keeping of slaves.
See?
TJ gave Halfborn a told-you-so look. More thunder rattled the plates and cups, as if agreeing with TJ. The berserker just rolled his eyes.
I knew this lady hated Loki, TJ summed up. She's a natural union supporter.
The giantess frowned.
I am not sure what that means, my very enthusiastic guest, but you are right. I am no friend of Loki's. There was a time when he didn't seem so bad. He could make me laugh. He was charming. Then, during the flighting in Aegir's hall, Loki insinuated that he had shared my bed.
Skadi shuddered at the memory.
In front of all the other gods
He slighted my honor. He said horrible things. And so, when the gods bound him in that cave, I was the one who found the serpent and set it over Loki's head. She smiled coldly. The Aesir and Vanir were satisfied just to bind him for eternity. But that wasn't enough for me. I wanted him to experience the drip, drip, drip of poison in his face for the rest of time. Just the way his words had made me feel.
I decided I would not be slighting Skadi's honor anytime soon.
Well, ma'am, Blitz tugged at his wool tunic. He was the only one of us who didn't look comfortable in his new threads, probably because the outfit did not allow him to wear an ascot.
Sounds like you gave the villain just what he deserved. Will you help us then?
Skadi set her bow across the table.
Let me understand this. You, Magnus Chase, plan to defeat Loki, the silver-tongued master of insults, in a verbal duel.
Right. She looked like she was waiting for me to wax poetic about my prowess with verbs and adjectives and whatnot. Honestly, that one-word answer was all I could manage.
Well then, Skadi said, it's a very good thing you have Kvasir's mead.
My friends all nodded. Thanks a lot, friends.
You were also wise not to drink it yet, Skadi continued. You have such a small amount. There is no telling how long its effect will last. You should drink it in the morning, just before you leave. That should allow enough time for the mead to take effect before you face Loki.
Then you know where he is? I asked. He's that close? I wasn't sure whether to be relieved or petrified. Skadi nodded.
Beyond my mountain, there lies a frozen bay where Naglfar sits at its moorings. In giant terms, it is only a few good strides away.
What is that in human terms? Asked Mallory.
It won't matter, Skadi assured her. I will give you skis to speed you on your way.
Harth signed. Skis?
I'm not so good on skis, Blitz muttered.
Skadi smiled.
Fear not, Blitzen, son of Freya. My skis will look good on you. You will have to reach the ship before midday tomorrow. By then, the ice blocking the bay will be sufficiently melted for Loki to sail into open waters. If that happens, nothing will be able to stop Ragnarok.
I met Mallory's eyes across the hearth fire. Her mom, Frigg, had been right. By the time we set foot on Naglfar, if we reached it, 48 hours would have passed since Flom.
If you manage to board the ship, Skadi said, you will somehow have to make your way through legions of giants and undead. They will, of course, try to kill you. But if you succeed in getting face to face with Loki and issuing your challenge, he will be honor-bound to accept. The fighting will stop long enough for the flighting.
So, Alex said, it'll be cake, then. Skadi's cat-o'-nine tails hair slithered across her shoulders as she regarded Alex.
You have an interesting definition of cake. Assuming Magnus somehow defeats Loki in a flighting and weakens him enough to capture, how will you imprison him?
Mallory said.
We have a walnut shell.
Skadi nodded.
That is good. A walnut shell might do it.
So, if I defeat Loki in the flighting, I said, and we do the walnut shell, etc., Then we shake hands with Loki's crew, everybody says good game, and they let us go, right?
Skadi snorted.
Hardly. The ceasefire will end as soon as the contest is over. Then, one way or another, the crew will kill you.
Well then, Halfborn said. Why don't you come with us, Skadi? We could use an archer in our group.
Skadi laughed.
This one amuses me.
Yeah, that feeling wears off quickly,
Mallory muttered.
The giantess rose.
Tonight you will stay in my hall, little mortals. You can sleep peacefully knowing that there is nothing to fear in Thunderhome. But in the morning,
she pointed to the white abyss beyond her windows,
out you go. The last thing I want is to get Niord's hopes up by pampering his grandson.
Chapter 39. I become as poetic as, like, a poetic person. Despite Scotty's promise, I didn't sleep peacefully. The coldness of the chamber and the constant booming didn't help. Nor did the knowledge that in the morning Skadi was apparently going to fit us with skis and throw us out a window. Also, I kept thinking about Alex Fierro. You know, maybe just a little. Alex was a force of nature, like the snow thunder. She struck when she felt like it, depending on temperature differentials and storm patterns I couldn't possibly predict. She shook my foundations in a way that was powerful, but also weirdly soft and constrained, veiled in blizzard. I couldn't assign any motives to her. She just did what she wanted. At least, that's how it felt to me. I stared at the ceiling for a long time. Finally, I got out of bed, used the wash basin, and changed into new wool clothes. White and gray, the colors of snow and ice. My runestone pendant hung cold and heavy on my neck, like Jack was catching some winks. I gathered my few supplies, then wandered into the corridors of Thunderhome, hoping I didn't get killed by a startled servant or a random arrow. In the Great Hall, I found Sam at prayer. Jack hummed against my collarbone, informing me in a sleepy, irritated tone that it was 4 in the morning, Niflheim Standard Time. Sam had faced her prayer rug toward the huge open windows. I guessed the blur of white outside made a good blank screen to stare at while you meditated on God or whatever. I waited until she finished. I'd come to recognize her routine by now. A moment of silence at the end, a sort of peaceful settling that even the thunder couldn't disturb. Then she turned and smiled.
Good morning, she said.
Hey. You're up early. I realized that was a stupid thing to say to a Muslim. If you're observant, you never sleep late, because you have to be up for prayers before first light. Being around Sam, I'd started to pay more attention to the timing of dawn and dusk, even when we were in other worlds.
I didn't sleep much, she said. I figured I would get in a good meal or two.
She patted her stomach. How do you know prayer times in Jotunheim? I asked. Or where Mecca is?
Heh. I take my best guess. That's allowed. It's the intention that counts.
I wondered if the same would be true of my coming challenge. Maybe Loki would say, well, Magnus, you really sucked at flighting, but you did your best, and it's the intention that counts, so you win.
Hey.
Sam's voice jarred me out of my thoughts.
You'll do fine.
You're awfully calm, I noted, considering, you know, today's the day. Sam adjusted her hijab, which was still white to match her outfit.
Last night was the 27th night of Ramadan. Traditionally, that's the night of power.
I waited. Is that when you get supercharged? She laughed.
Sort of. It commemorates when Muhammad received his first revelation from the angel Gabriel. Nobody knows exactly which night it is, but it's the holiest of the year.
Wait, it's your holiest night, and you don't know when it is? Sam shrugged.
Most people go with the 27th, but yeah. It's one of the nights of the last 10 days of Ramadan. Not knowing keeps you on your toes. Anyway, last night it just felt right. I stayed up praying and thinking, and I just felt confirmed. Like there is something bigger than all this. Loki, Ragnarok, the Ship of the Dead. My dad may have power over me because he's my dad, but he's not the biggest power. Allahu Akbar.
I knew that term, but I'd never heard Sam use it before. I'll admit, it gave me an instinctive jolt in the gut. The news media loved to talk about how terrorists would say that right before they did something horrible and blew people up. I wasn't going to mention that to Sam. I imagined she was painfully aware. She couldn't walk the streets of Boston in her hijab most days without somebody screaming at her to go home. And if she was in a bad mood, she'd scream back, "I'm from Dorchester." "Yeah," I said. "That means God is great, right?" Sam shook her head.
"That's a slightly inaccurate translation. It means God is greater."
"Than what?"
"Everything. The whole point of saying it is to remind you that God is greater than whatever you are facing. Your fears, your problems, your thirst, your hunger, your anger, even your issues with a parent like Loki."
She shook her head.
"Sorry, that must sound really hokey to an atheist."
I shrugged, feeling awkward. I wished I could have Sam's level of faith. I didn't, but it clearly worked for her, and I needed her to be confident, especially today. "Well, you sound supercharged. That's what counts. Ready to kick some undead butt?"
"Yep."
She smirked.
"What about you? Are you ready to face Alex?"
I wondered if God was greater than the punch in the stomach Sam had just given me. What do you mean?
"Oh, Magnus," she said. "You are so emotionally nearsighted, it's almost cute."
Before I could think of some clever way not to respond to that, perhaps by shouting, "Look over there," and running away, Scotty's voice boomed through the hall.
"There are my early risers."
The giantess was dressed in enough white fur to outfit a family of polar bears. Behind her, a line of servants trudged in, carrying an assortment of wooden skis.
"Let's rouse your friends and get you on your way."
Our friends were not thrilled about getting up. I had to pour ice water on Halfborn Gunderson's head twice. Blitz grumbled something about ducks and told me to go away. When I tried to shake Hearth awake, he stuck one hand above the covers and signed, "I am not here." TJ bolted out of bed screaming, "Charge!" Fortunately, he wasn't armed, or he would have run me through. Finally, everybody assembled in the main hall, where Scotty's servants set our last meal. Sorry, our breakfast of bread, cheese, and apple cider.
"This cider was made from the apples of immortality," Scotty said. "Centuries ago, when my father kidnapped the goddess Idun, we fermented some of her apples into cider. It's quite diluted. It won't make you immortal, but it will give you a boost of endurance. At least long enough to get through the wilds of Niflheim."
I drained the cup. The cider didn't make me feel particularly boosted, but it did tingle a little. It settled the crackling and popping in my stomach. After eating, we tried on our skis with varying degrees of success. Hearthstone waddled around gracefully in his. Who knew elves could waddle gracefully? While Blitz tried in vain to find a pair that matched his shoes.
"Do you have anything smaller?" he asked. "Also, maybe in a dark brown? Like a mahogany?"
Skadi patted him on the head, which wasn't something dwarves appreciated. Mallory and Halfborn shuffled around with ease, but both of them had to help TJ stay on his feet.
"Jefferson, I thought you grew up in New England," Halfborn said. "You never skied?"
"I lived in a city," TJ grumbled. "Also, I'm black. There weren't a lot of black guys skiing down the Boston waterfront in 1861. Sam looked a little awkward on her skis, but since she could fly, I wasn't too worried about her. As for Alex, she sat by an open window putting on a pair of hot pink ski boots. Had she brought them with her? Had she tipped a servant a few kroner to find her a pair in Scotty's supply closet? I had no idea. But she wouldn't be skiing off to her death in bland white and gray. She wore a green fur cloak. Scotty must have skinned a few Grinches to make it, over her mauve jeans and green and pink sweater vest. To top off the look, she wore an Amelia Earhart-style aviator's cap with her pink sunglasses. Just when I thought I'd seen all the outfits nobody but Alex could pull off, she pulled off a new one. As she adjusted her skis, she paid no attention to the rest of us. And by the rest of us, I mean me. She seemed lost in her thoughts, maybe considering what she would say to her mother, Loki, before she attempted to garrot his head off. At last, we were all in skis, standing in pairs next to the open windows like a group of Olympic jumpers.
"Well, Magnus Chase," Scotty said, "all that remains is the drinking of the mead."
Sam, standing on my left, offered me the canteen. "Oh," I wondered if it was safe to drink mead before operating skis. Maybe the laws were more lax out here in the hinterlands.
"You mean now?"
"Yes," Scotty said. "Now."
I uncapped the canteen. This was the moment of truth. We'd ventured across worlds and nearly died countless times. We'd feasted with Aegir, battled pottery with pottery, slain a dragon, and siphoned mead with an old rubber hose just so I could drink this honeyed blood beverage, which would hopefully make me poetic enough to talk smack about Loki. I saw no point in doing a taste test. I chugged down the mead in three big gulps. I was expecting the taste of blood, but Kvasir's mead tasted more like, well, mead. It certainly didn't burn like dragon's blood, or even tingle like Scotty's cider of not-quite immortality.
"How do you feel?"
Blitz asked hopefully.
"Poetic?"
I burped. "I feel okay."
"That's it?"
Alex demanded. "Say something impressive. Describe the storm." I gazed out the windows into the blizzard. "The storm looks white. Also cold." Halfborn sighed.
"We're all dead."
"Good luck, heroes," Scotty called.
Then her servants pushed us out the windows into the void. Chapter 40. I get a collect call from hell. We hurtled through the sky like things that hurtle through the sky. The wind whipped my face. The snow blinded me. The cold was so bad, it made me cold. Okay, yeah. The mead of poetry definitely wasn't working. Then gravity took hold. I hated gravity. My skis scraped and hissed against packed snow. I hadn't been skiing in a long time. I'd never done it careening down a 45-degree slope in sub-zero temperatures and blizzard conditions. My eyeballs froze. The cold seared my cheeks. Somehow, I avoided a wipeout. Each time I started to wobble, my skis auto-corrected, keeping me upright. Off to my right, I caught a glimpse of Sam flying along, her skis 6 feet above the ground. Cheater. Hearthstone zipped past on my left, signing, "On your left," which was not very helpful. In front of me, Blitzen fell out of the sky, screaming at the top of his lungs. He hit the snow and immediately executed a series of dazzling slaloms, figure eights, and triple flips. Either he was a much better skier than he let on, or his magical skis had an evil sense of humor. My knees and ankles burned with strain. The wind ripped straight through my super-heavy, giant-weave clothes. I figured any minute I would stumble more than my magical skis could compensate for. I'd hit a boulder, break my neck, and end up sprawled across the snow like... Forget it. I'm not even trying that one. Suddenly, the slope evened out. The blizzard abated. Our speed decreased, and all eight of us slid to a gentle stop like we'd just finished the bunny slope at Mount Easy McWeaksauce. Hey, that was a simile. Maybe my usual, just average skill with description was coming back. Our skis popped off of their own accord. Alex was the first one back in motion. She ran ahead and took cover behind a low stone ridge that cut across the snow. I suppose that made sense, since she was the most colorful target within 5 square miles. The rest of us joined her. Our riderless skis turned around and zipped back up the mountain.
So much for an exit strategy. Alex looked at me for the first time since last night. You'd better start feeling poetic soon, Chase. 'Cause you're out of time.
I peeked over the ridge and saw what she meant. A few hundred yards away, through a thin veil of sleet, aluminum-gray water stretched to the horizon. At the near shore, rising from the icy bay, was the dark shape of Naglfar, the ship of the dead. It was so huge that if I hadn't known it was a sailing vessel, I might have thought it was another promontory like Skadi's mountain fortress. Its mainsail would have taken several days to climb. Its massive hull must have displaced enough water to fill the Grand Canyon. The deck and gangplank swarmed with what looked like angry ants, though I had a feeling that if we were closer, those shapes would have resolved into giants and zombies. Thousands upon thousands of them. Before, I'd only seen the ship in dreams. Now, I realized how desperate our situation was. 8 people facing an army designed to destroy worlds. And our hopes hinged on me finding Loki and calling him some bad names. The absurdity of it might have made me feel hopeless. Instead, it made me angry. I didn't feel poetic exactly, but I did feel a burning in my throat. The desire to tell Loki exactly what I thought of him. Some choice, colorful metaphors sprang to mind. "I'm ready," I said, hoping I was right. "How do we find Loki without getting killed?" "Frontal charge?" TJ suggested. "I'm kidding," TJ said. Clearly, this calls for diversionary tactics. Most of us should find a way to the front of the vessel and attack. We cause a disturbance. Draw as many of those baddies as we can away from the gangplanks. Give Magnus a chance to get aboard and challenge Loki.
"Wait a second.
I agree with Union Boy," said Mallory.
"Yep,"
Halfborn hefted his battle axe.
"Battle axe is thirsty for Jotun blood."
"Hold on," I said. "That's suicide."
"Nah," Blitz said. "Kid, we've been talking about this, and we've got a plan. I brought some dwarven ropes. Mallory's got grappling hooks. Hearth's got his runestones. With luck, we can scale the prow of that ship and start making chaos."
He patted one of the supply bags he'd carried from the Big Banana.
"Don't worry,
I've got some surprises in store for those undead warriors. You sneak up the aft gangway, find Loki, and demand a duel. Then the fighting should stop. We'll be fine.
Yeah, Halfborn said. Then we'll come watch you beat that main fritter at insults.
And I'll throw a walnut at him, Mallory finished. Give us 30 minutes or so to get in position. Sam, Alex, take good care of our boy.
We will, Sam said. Even Alex did not complain. I realized I'd been completely outmaneuvered. My friends had united on a plan to maximize my chances, regardless of how dangerous it might be for them.
Guys, Hearth signed, time is wasting. Here, for you.
From his pouch, he handed me Othala, the same runestone we'd taken from Andoron's cairn. Lying in my palm, it brought back the smell of rotting reptile flesh and burnt brownies.
Thanks, I said. But why this particular rune?
Does not just mean inheritance, Hearth signed. Othala symbolizes aid on a journey. Use it once we are gone. It should protect you.
How?
He shrugged. Don't ask me. I'm just the sorcerer.
All right then, TJ said. Alex, Sam, Magnus, we'll see you on that ship.
Before I could object, or even thank them, the rest of the group trundled off through the snow. In their Jotunish white clothes, they quickly disappeared into the terrain. I turned to Alex and Sam. How long have you all been planning this?
Despite her cracked and bleeding lips, Alex grinned.
About as long as you've been clueless. So, a while.
We should get going, Sam said. Shall we try your rune? I looked down at Othala. I wondered if there was some connection between inheritance and aid on a journey. I couldn't think of any. I didn't like where this rune came from or what it stood for, but I supposed it made sense that I'd have to use it. We'd earned it with a lot of pain and suffering, the same way we'd earned the mead.
Do I just throw it in the air? I wondered.
I imagine Hearth would say,
Alex continued in sign language, yes, you idiot. I was pretty sure that wasn't what Hearth would say. I tossed the rune. The Othala dissolved in a wisp of snow. I hoped it would reappear in Hearth's rune bag after a day or two, the way runes usually did after he used them. I definitely didn't want to buy him a replacement.
Nothing happened, I noted. Then I glanced to either side of me.
Alex and Sam had disappeared.
Oh, gods, I vaporized you!
I tried to stand up, but unseen hands grabbed me from either side and dragged me back down.
I'm right here,
Alex said.
Sam?
Here, Sam confirmed.
It seems the rune made us invisible. I can see myself, but not you guys.
I glanced down. Sam was right. I could see myself just fine, but the only sign of my two friends was their impressions where they sat in the snow. I wondered why Othala had chosen invisibility. Was it drawing on my personal experience, feeling invisible when I was homeless? Or maybe the magic was shaped by Hearthstone's family experience. I imagined he'd wished he were invisible to his father for most of his childhood. Whatever the case, I didn't intend to waste this chance.
Let's get moving, I said.
Hold hands, Alex ordered.
She took my left hand with no particular affection, as if I were a walking stick. Sam did not take my other hand, but I suspected it wasn't for religious reasons. She just liked the idea of Alex and me holding hands. I could almost hear Sam smiling.
Okay, she said. Let's go.
We trudged along the stone ridge, heading for the shore. I worried about leaving a trail of footprints, but the snow and wind quickly blew away all traces of our passage. The temperature and wind were as bitter as the day before, but Scotty's apple cider must have been working. My breathing didn't feel like I was inhaling glass. I didn't have the need to check my face every few seconds to make sure my nose hadn't fallen off. Over the howl of the wind and the boom of glaciers calving into the bay, other sounds reached us from the deck of Naglfar. Chains clanking, beams creaking, giants barking orders, and the boots of last-minute arrivals tromping across the fingernailed deck. The ship must have been very close to sailing. We were about 100 yards from the dock when Alex yanked on my hand. "Down, you idiot!" I dropped in place, though I didn't see how we could hide much better than being invisible. Emerging from the wind and snow, passing within 10 feet of us, a troop of ghoulish soldiers marched toward Naglfar. I hadn't seen them coming, and Alex was right. I didn't want to trust that invisibility would keep me hidden from these guys. Their tattered leather armor was glazed with ice. Their bodies were nothing but desiccated bits of flesh clinging to bones. Blue spectral light flickered inside their rib cages and skulls, making me think of birthday candles parading across the worst birthday cake ever. As the undead tromped past, I noticed that the soles of their boots were studded with nails, like cleats. I remembered something Halfborn Gunderson had once told me. Because the road to Helheim was icy, the dishonored dead were buried with nailed shoes to keep them from slipping along the way. Now those boots were marching their owners back to the world of the living. Alex's hand shivered in mine, or maybe I was the one shivering. At last the dead passed us, heading for the docks and the ship of the dead. I got unsteadily to my feet.
"Allah defend us," Sam muttered.
I desperately hoped that if the big guy was real, Sam had some pull with him. We were going to need defending.
"Our friends are facing that," Alex said. "We've got to hurry."
She was right again. The only thing that would make me want to go aboard a ship filled with thousands of those zombies was knowing that if we didn't, our friends would fight them alone. That wasn't going to happen.